Last week, when we last saw Jesus, he was on the Sea of Galilee. He was helping Peter as Peter confronted his fear. After the storm was over, the disciples and Jesus went to the other side of the lake, and there people found them. We are told that scores of people kept coming to Jesus, asking to be healed. And so Jesus healed many, many people. But these were not the only people who came to Jesus. In fact, others came as well. They were religious scholars. And the religious scholars did not come for healing. They came with a question. And the question was interesting, considering the context of all this healing that has been taking place. The question was actually about the disciples. The Pharisees and the scribes asked Jesus this question: "Why do your disciples not wash their hands before they eat?" A curious question, not really having to do with hygiene, but actually a question about Jesus and his authority as a teacher and the tradition that he is teaching. Because, as you may know, washing one's hands was part of how you became ritually clean, right with God. It was part of the practices that allowed you to become good with God and with the people. And so, if these disciples were not doing this, what in the world was Jesus teaching? Well, Jesus answers this with a teaching of his own. And he says that it is not what goes into the mouth that defiles, but it's what comes out of the mouth that defiles. Because what comes out of the mouth is what reveals the heart. These last days, weeks, months, it's like we have been ingesting hate in the form of racial hatred, religious bile, and not just by trolls, but these words of diminishment, of deformation, of destruction, even by a president. And so, as we have taken in these words, it has left us with a challenge. What words will come from us? What words will we use to reveal the state of our hearts? It was the rabbi Abraham Heschel who said that words create worlds. Words create worlds. He also said that the Holocaust did not begin by Hitler building crematoria. The Holocaust also did not begin with tanks and guns. Rabbi Heschel teaches that the Holocaust began with words, with defamation and distortion, and with pernicious lies. That's how it began. And for us, in this last 10 days especially, we have heard words of deformation and distortion and of pernicious lie. But these last 10 days actually have revealed to us what has been known for years upon years upon years. That we are still possessed by America's original sin of racism, and that we are still possessed by the hatred of Jews. These are the words that are attempting to create worlds. And people who use those words will be gathering here in Berkeley exactly a week from right now. And so this past week and these past weeks, many have been preparing for how to meet them. Some preparing with shouts and fists, others preparing with linked arms and deeds of mercy. And here at All Souls, yesterday we hosted a nonviolence training and a safety training and a sign-making time. And all week I've been wondering, what will be on a sign that I will carry? If words make worlds, what sign will be mine? Now, you may not be a sign person. You may not feel that you are fervent enough or clever enough. But for the sake of this sermon, let's just say that you are. What would you write? What would you want to give witness to? How would you encapsulate what you believe to be true? What words would you use to create a new world? A good start.
Hate is not a Christian value.
And another.
There's no Jew nor Greek.
And another.
You're angry at yourself.
Peace be with you.
Peace be with you. So after Jesus taught about words, he and the disciples left the Galilee, and they went into Gentile territory. They went up the coast of the Mediterranean to Tyre and Sidon. And when they got there, we are told that they were pursued by, we are told, a Canaanite woman who was shouting to Jesus, maybe shouting at Jesus, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David, for my daughter is tormented by a demon." Now, it's actually kind of bizarre that the writer of this gospel uses the word Canaanite to describe her. Because at this point in time, in this place, people did not understand themselves to be Canaanites anymore. That was ancient history. And so why is it that Matthew's gospel would describe her as a Canaanite? Well, some say it's because it's a stand-in. It evokes ancient foes or odious religious practice. And it comes in the Gospel of Matthew. And if you remember, the Gospel of Matthew has probably the least dramatic beginning to its gospel. Does anybody remember how the Gospel of Matthew begins? The genealogy, lots and lots of names. But in those names, the writer of the Gospel of Matthew carefully places three women in the family tree. And all three of them are Canaanites. And all three of them have stories that show unheard of initiative and result in them joining the family tree. And so, this woman is shouting to Jesus, and what does Jesus do? Jesus ignores her. And so, she persists. She persists. And the disciples, are they unnerved by her desperation? Are they disgusted by her foreignness? But they tell Jesus to get rid of her. And Jesus' response is, I was called to the children of the house of Israel, to those sheep. Essentially, you're not my job. Again, she persists and she says, but Lord, because he says, you know, you don't take the food from the children and give it to the dogs. To which I say, Jesus, words make worlds. But that's not what she says. She has such faith in the feast that Jesus talks about that she says, but even the dogs feed off of the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Essentially, she is reminding Jesus, she is teaching Jesus that this table, this feast in the realm of heaven is so abundant that there is enough for all. Even the scraps will be sufficient for her. Which changes Jesus. And he praises her faith, and her daughter is healed. Because this table is abundant. This question, it seems to come up in the first century, in the fourth century, in every century, in every generation, this question, is this table enough? Is it big enough? And I believe it's part of why Paul is writing this letter to the Romans that we heard earlier. Is this table enough for all? And so in this letter, which is this the biblical and theological underpinnings for this renewal of the faith of the matriarchs and the patriarchs, Paul asks this rhetorical question. Has God revoked the covenant from these people? And the answer? By no means. And he later says that the calling of God, the gifts of God, are irrevocable. That there will always be a place at God's table. That does not change. And so it is providential, friends, that we hear this text today, at a time when neo-Nazis are using vile slogans and pernicious lies that are not just of this generation, but have been spoken by members of the Christian church for centuries. And it is for us to redeem this corrupting theology. There will always be room at this table. We hear Paul's letter to the Romans so that we do not forget. We hear the story of the Canaanite woman so that we will remember and we will be changed. For just as she changed Jesus and she changed the disciples and she changed the gospel that the community that produced this gospel, we hear the story so that we will be changed. But I don't like to change. It's hard. And I have the privilege to not be moved. Like Jesus had the privilege to not be moved, which you might as well. What would happen if you were able to trust in the abundance of God's feast, that there was enough for friend and foe alike? What would happen? What would change? Who would you love? How would you live? What steps would you take? What would your sign read? What words will create a new world?